Senator Wicker, Senate File 2388.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, I do have an author's amendment to A1.
Senator Wicker, we've got to wait until we have a quorum to adopt that, but why don't you walk through the bill as if it's in the condition that you want it in.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. Senate File 2388 is a tax increment financing proposal for the city of Oakdale. Oakdale, as you all know, is a second-ring suburb just a few minutes from here, northeast of the Capitol. If you go down 94, it's bisected by Interstate 694. One of the properties is right near Tanner's Lake, along Tanner's Lake, Blackie's Saloon, a couple of other places that used to be thriving restaurants, and now the area is blighted. And it's right in the shadow of the 3M corporate headquarters across the street. That is one area addressed in the proposal. The other is the Oakdale Mall. That mall is basically deserted. Weeds in the parking lot, and this provision in the tax increment financing proposal would provide hope, opportunity for redeveloping both of these areas. Oakdale's doing very well as a community, nearly 50 years old. It's basically developed with a few areas remaining, but now it's targeting its efforts for redevelopment, and these are the two top priorities for Oakdale. There's been a lot of people that have worked at the grassroots level to develop a proposal that you have here today to share that vision, the dream for Oakdale to redevelop key areas of the community. And I'd like to call on two community witnesses first to provide background on the need for the proposal. First, the mayor of Oakdale, Carmen Surak, and he'll be followed by Pastor John Larson, who's the president of the Oakdale Business and Professional Association. So, Mr. Chair, if I could yield to Mayor Carmen Surak.
Certainly, Mayor. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Committee Chair and committee members. I just want to give you a little background on the two sites that we're talking about. The one is the Tanner's Lake area, which is really, when you enter the Twin City area from Wisconsin, is very visible along Tanner's Lake there. And at one time, it was really thriving. I don't know if any of you have ever had a chance to visit Toby's when it was there.
Yes.
It was really a nice, high-class restaurant that 3M used a lot. And you got to remember, 3M is just across the street to the west, so this is this redevelopment is really important to us, but it's important to the state of Minnesota because of the impact 3M has on the state. And when they bring people from all over the world and they bring in new executives that they want to work here and live here, it's not a very good site right now. It's really blighted. We get an awful lot of police calls at Blackie's. It's amazing that we haven't had more crime down there. The second site is the Oakdale Mall site, and the Oakdale Mall is on 10th and 694, right on the corner. It's a large mall. It's about 70 to 80% vacant right now. Obviously, during this cold winter, we've had all kinds of pipes break in there, all kinds of police calls, fire calls. In fact, the fire chief went through there just a couple weeks ago, and these seniors play cards in there, and they had their place where they play cards. They had a tarp around there to keep the heat in, and it definitely violated all the fire codes. So we unfortunately had to break up their cribbage game and let them know that this just isn't acceptable. So that whole site, I've been on the city council for 17 years, and out of those 17 years, I think I've had more people ask me about what are you going to do with the Oakdale Mall? What's going to happen with the Oakdale Mall? It has basically been sitting empty or practically empty for a good 15 years now. And it's just a blight in the area. And those are the two main sites that we'd really like help on. And we're here today to ask for your help. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
My next testifier is Pastor John Larson.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you for hearing us today. I represent a thriving organization in the business community, Oakdale Business and Professional Association, about 250 members, 170 businesses that enthusiastically endorse this legislation for a number of reasons. One is to continue to keep the morale of our community high. There is a great pride in Oakdale and the businesses that are there. And there are a few blights, and the two that are being referenced today are those. And it's not consistent, really, with the business climate in which the organization that I lead is a part of. Our board enthusiastically embraced this legislation, along with the school district. As a representative also of the faith community, we are very much aware of what a climate or a business climate does to the morale of its citizens. So as a citizen as well, my wife and I walked in one of these areas just last week, and I was a little embarrassed when we had to walk around puddles of water because of leaks in the ceiling, and appreciate your consideration of this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Larson.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, that completes the testimony from Mayor Sarek and Pastor Larson, and hopefully the need is clear to members. And now I'd like to have representatives from the city staff to walk through more on the details of the proposal, and we have slides to accompany their presentation. So we'll excuse two testifiers and ask City Manager Administrator Craig Waldron and Bob Streeter to join us. And with your permission, I would ask Craig Waldron to continue with the presentation.
Let me first say, Mr. Waldron and Mr. Streeter, thank you. Members, I was up to Oakdale and toured these two sites back 6 weeks ago or so, maybe, and you were great hosts, and it's pretty easy when you see this firsthand to see the need that the city has in redevelopment in these two parcels. So thank you for the special tour you gave me. It was very helpful for me to understand your proposal. And welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. And Mr. Chair, we certainly appreciated having you out there, too. We very much appreciate your time with respect to our project there. So thank you. We thought that probably the best way to depict this is to show you some of the pictures, the classic pictures worth a thousand words. Suffice to say, administratively for us, it's a major problem in terms of policing, the continued deterioration, and just what it's doing for us in terms of tax value, and the blight is starting to spread. If we could, we'd like to just briefly go over the slideshow that depicts that, and Bob Streeter, our community development director, can just highlight some of the photos, and this follows the presentation that we provided for you. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, this is the Oakdale Mall site. It is about 20 acres. It's a 180,000 square foot mall that's between 20 and 30% occupied and has been in that condition for a number of years. This is 694. Thanks. As you're looking to your right, this is an example of a sign that has not been repaired for more than a few years, and this is just one of them. This is what you see when you go in the mall. This is an end cap. This is where you may find an anchor like a Sears or Montgomery Ward's. It's totally vacant. This is what the mall looks like 2 days ago when I took the pictures. I went there during lunch. They're not lighting the building, and they're not heating the building. This is the longest corridor in the mall, and you can see there's nobody there at noon. This is what you see. This is a sprinkler head. When you don't heat the building, the sprinkler heads freeze and they break and they flood the building. This is the third time this has happened this winter. If it happens again, our fire department needs to shut the mall down because you have tenants there that need the sprinkler system for safety. This is our site plan that we're proposing, and it's a concept plan, but you've got 268,000 square feet of commercial office, commercial retail. There is room for a hotel and some housing 3 or 4 years from now. The current value, current assessed value, $6.2 million. Upon completion, it will be $52. It's generating about $177,000 a year in taxes. When redevelopment occurs, it will be $1.4 million. We have two developers that are now working independently with the property owner on redevelopment plans on it that they can bring to the city council. The second site is the Tanner's Lake site. As the mayor said, this is to your left, right across the road is the 3M campus. It sits on Tanner's Lake, a recreational lake in Oakdale. It has three properties, Blackie's, which is a wonderful training ground for our police department. They're there every weekend. You have Toby's restaurant that has been closed for some time and the owner does not intend to reopen it. And this is our plan for redevelopment. We've got 20,000 square feet of office commercial in Oakdale, and if you look down those three longer buildings, that's actually the city of Maplewood. We are beginning to work with them on doing a master plan for this entire area. We do have, current taxes on the Tanner's Lake is $17,000. When it's done, it'll be $52,000. We do have a developer, Manley Brothers. They do have an agreement with the Toby's restaurant to acquire them voluntarily. The city has a purchase agreement with Blackie's. Will be closing in probably 45 days, and the developer is voluntarily negotiating with Harmon Glass. So there's a lot of activity and momentum. That's all I have, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Streeter. Members, it was pretty amazing to see. I rent in Maplewood, and I'm familiar with Oakdale. It's not very far away. In fact, I was over there to Fleet Farm the other night, and I don't know what I bought. I bought something again. But it was pretty amazing to see that in what us rural guys think of as a pretty thriving community, that they have a huge mall sitting, I mean, virtually 90% empty. I guess I wasn't aware that we had property like that in our suburbs that were in such bad need of redevelopment. Senator Mock?
Mr. Chair, Senator Weger, I'm interested in what the prospective plans are for the redevelopment of the Oakdale Mall.
Okay, Ms. Chair, Senator Moi, I'll ask staff and their associates to go through additional plans.
Sure. Senator, what you have before you, this should be in your packet. There are a total of 13 buildings that are proposed for this site, and the city council yet has to work with the developer to finalize the plans. This is a concept plan. Its purpose is to figure out what we can do on site and to help develop the financial framework. But you're looking at office retail, office retail on the first and second floor. You have a 100-room hotel, which there is a demand for at this site. You have some condominiums which, as I mentioned earlier, won't be coming online for at least 3 to 4 years. And then you have some green space. And we have two developers, Sherman Associates and Ryan, that are both capable of doing a project like this.
And, Mr. Chair, Senator Weger, so the office space are for what kind of individuals, like professionals, lawyers,
yes,
dentists,
yes,
and there's a market to support that,
yes,
in this site.
Yes.
For the record, Mr. Streeter is responding.
Okay. Senator DeVos.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is kind of along the same lines. I'm curious to know, I mean, I guess it's the great unknowable, but what is our best guess or analysis of why this mall failed?
Mr. Chair, Senator.
Mr. Walden.
What was interesting is I can remember, I wasn't with the city, but I can remember back when it opened. And the first problem was they tried to duplicate that Florida mall type of approach where you had the discount mall. There were a couple of those that were attempted within the state, and they both ended up abysmal failures. The other one was Eden Prairie, and that's completely redeveloped. What then made this worse is that this was offered as part of the resolution trust situation, so a out-of-state owner purchased it and has never really made a major investment, but the initial purchase cost was so low that they've been able to stick it out all this time. Now it's starting to get to the point without the tenants and so forth that it's starting to hurt. But a bad concept and out-of-state owner.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of follow-ups. So two things. One is, so I think you answered Senator Moore's question. We think there's a good market for the ideas that are in the redevelopment proposal. I would encourage, of course, you know, with my kind of infrastructure, public side hat on, you know, to take a look at the transportation facilities, make sure that this is very transit friendly, and you're working with the Met Council to make sure transit service is coming here. I had one more thought. I forgot what it was. I'll think of it in a second.
We'll come back. You get the bill in the shape the author wants, Senator Larson moves the A1 amendment, and members, all this does is takes the parcel numbers that are in the bill and changes them to legal descriptions. On the Larson motion on the A1 amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
On the contrary, no. Motion prevails. The A1 is adopted. Senator Wieger, just for the record, I know the school superintendent at North St. Paul.
Superintendent Phillips, the superintendent.
And has the school board taken a... You know, they have some skin in this game also. Have they taken a formal position on it by any resolution or a letter or anything?
Yes. There's a letter that is in the packet and on screen.
In support of the TIF extension?
Yes. And as well, the county board, Washington County Board, has endorsed the proposal.
In writing?
Yes. That's also attached.
Senator Moore.
Well, you know, Mr. Chair, Oakdale borders St. Paul, or one half of St. Paul, where South Maplewood doesn't. And so I go by all of these places a lot. And, in fact, you know, when I was running for the first time in my special election, one of the political lunches that I had was at Toby's. And my family go to the Denny's that's in that little strip by Tanner Lake. So I'm very familiar with all the areas that you're looking at, and I'm excited to see this moving forward, and I wish you lots of luck. And I'm looking forward to the day Senator Wieger invites all of us over to cut the ribbon. This is a wonderful step moving forward in these areas.
Thank you, Senator Wieger, explain for the committee why we need a 10-year extension, why this project won't work with 25 years, or maybe Mr. Waldron can do that. But why doesn't it work with 25? Why do we need 35 years?
Mr. Chair, I'll yield to Mr. Waldron. You could do 25. We want to do it right.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. We've run our numbers on this, and we did try to see if we could make it work at 25 years. And it's just based on the purchase price, the demolition, we have not been able to get it to work. So based on our analysis and our projections, 25 years just simply won't work for us, and therefore we're asking the additional 10 to work on it. If it does work and we're able to make the numbers come out in 24 years or 28 years, we'd certainly decertify it. But our initial runs based on the projected development and working with our fiscal consultants, we just can't get it to pencil out at this point.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you. I remembered my final thought. I'm getting to that age where I need to start writing things down.
You're not even close to that age, Senator Dibble.
I'm just curious to know, with the changes we have to the condemnation laws, the constraints now on locals, and their ability to redevelop for private purposes. So, do we have a willing seller here? How do we envision that this property
Chair,
will be?
Senator Dibble, we do have a at the mall. We have a person that is sitting down at the table with us now and is working with, as Bob mentioned, a couple of the developers. So I think we've got positive movement there. And as I said, it's not as financially lucrative anymore to hang on to that mall. Yeah. On the Tanner site, it's going extremely well. We actually have a purchase agreement on one of the biggest parcels, Blackie's, and then the individuals to the south are the Miller family that owned Toby's is actually working with us and the developers. So we have the biggest parcels essentially under control.
Mr. Just a comment. Under the best of circumstances, before the changes to the eminent domain and condemnation laws, when private owners knew that government was interested, dollar signs would spring up in their eyes. I just caution, put it out there, negotiation. Now there's more leverage on the private side, and the dollar signs, I think, are probably getting even bigger. And, these are business folks. They know where their points of leverage are, and they know you're hungry to do something. Those dollar signs probably creating those extensions to TIF districts and that sort of thing. So, as you negotiate, make sure you have some leverage and some advantage in that circumstance.
Senator Dibble, I had that discussion with the city when I was out to visit the site, and it appears like those discussions are going pretty well. Senator Mois?
Mr. Chair, whatever the motion is, I'd like to move it whenever it's appropriate.
Any other discussion from the committee?
Mr. Chair, there was one point, a question perhaps that Senator Dibble had earlier that Mayor Surak wanted to respond to, which is important regarding the whole approach, and reference was made to transportation and transit, and Mayor Surak would like to briefly address that before you entertain that motion.
Hey, Senator, regarding transportation, as a matter of fact, last night at our council meeting, we passed a resolution extending the park and ride at Guardian Angels for the Metropolitan Transit for an additional 400 cars there. And we also have the Northeast Suburban Dial Ride out there and bus system out there. So we have the transportation as well taken care of.
Great. Thank you.
Any other questions from the committee? If not, the chair lays over Senate File 2388 as amended for consideration in the committee's omnibus bill. Thank you, Senator Wieger and members of Oakdale.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Wish you good success with your developer, and hopefully if we get this done for you, we hope you have an agreement and are moving forward.
Thank you.
Is Senator Rosen here?
Okay. I'm little, but I'm not that little.
Senator Rosen is next. Senator Rosen, welcome to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members. Appreciate that.
Members, Senate File 2601.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As Senator Wieger's bill dealt with TIF, or Tax Increment Financing, and extending the length, we are decertifying a TIF district in Wells, Minnesota. And basically what this would do is all lease payments would not be considered for tax increment, and also upon the sale of the building, it would not be considered for a tax increment. With me, I have Rhonda Alice, the city administrator for Wells, and I also have Jennifer O'Rourke from the League of Minnesota Cities. But I would like to start off, if that would be okay, Mr. Chair, to start with Dick Aslison from the Northland Securities, and he's a TIF consultant.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I have worked with the City of Wells for in excess of 10 years on their tax increment matters, and it's kind of ironic that we follow the city of Oakdale, who made what I would consider a reasonable and legitimate request for an extension of tax increment. Wells is here, as Senator Rosen just indicated, to say please help them cut off their tax increment. It's probably a first before the legislature to ask for help to end it. Now, let me explain what that means. Their district that we're talking about was created in 1980, one of the so-called gap tax increment districts created between 1979 and 1982. A whole bunch of special rules have applied over the years to those districts. The legislature in 1999 passed some legislation that basically sunset the districts and created an allowance or a forgiveness of some past problems that many cities had had with districts created in that time frame. Wells had none of those problems, so the legislation didn't directly apply to them, but it basically said you are limited 100% to making tax increment expenditures for in-district purposes. That's always been the case in Wells. The district since 1980 has significantly helped their downtown area, and the issue that is bringing this bill before you is in about the year 2000, 2001 time frame, they acquired a building, renovated it, and subsequently have leased it, and the lessee now has an option to purchase. The tax increment district reached the end of its legal life, if you will, December 31 of 06. But there's there's legislation back to 1997 that defines tax increment as not only including the real raw tax increment, but certain lease payments. And so now that Wells has this building leased, the district is over, the lease money is coming in, it's considered tax increment. Wells cannot use it for even paying the maintenance costs of the building, so it has to be returned to the county. So they're asking, the bottom line is, let's end the district, and that's it's a good addition to our downtown, but enough is enough. And with that, pass it back to Senator Rosen, and she will in turn ask the city administrator to comment.
Mr. Chair, if I could, before I'd like to have Jennifer O'Rourke comment on this from the Minnesota League of Minnesota Cities.
Thank you, Senator Rosen. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Jennifer O'Rourke. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. And as you might know, we have some TIF types, if you will, at the League of Minnesota Cities. There are city administrators, economic development types, and a group that we often bring up bills such as this to vet through during the summer and the fall. We did that with this particular issue, and it's been we've known about it for about a year and a half. Rhonda Ellis is a member of that group, and the language that you see before you is something that we've helped them with in this process. And we've tried to do a little legwork on our end in terms of seeing if there are other cities out there in this sort of situation, and we haven't been able to really come up with any, which is why you don't see a general piece of legislation and something specific for Wells today.
And Mr. Chair, I have Rhonda Ellis, City Administrator.
Thank you, Senator Rosen, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. My name is Rhonda Ellis. I am the city administrator for the city of Wells. I think Mr. Azelson summed things up very well for us. And basically, we are in a situation where the city of Wells purchased a building in our downtown district, which was scheduled for foreclosure. We worked with the bank on the purchase of the building. Total investment on behalf of the city by using TIF dollars while the district was still active was about $40,000. There was about a $7,000 purchase price, $33,000 to rehab the building. We were fortunate in August of 2006 to have a law firm locate an office here in the city of Wells in our downtown area. And the district decertified December 31st of 06. So we had about 5 months of lease funds that were received while the district was still active. The problem is we are now looking at another 2.5 years of lease payments with an option for them to purchase at the end of the 3 year that we are not able to keep those funds for. The city does still own the building. We still have maintenance and expense costs against the building. And what we are hoping to be able to do is to take all those lease dollars and hopefully in the end some purchase dollars and be able to keep those locally rather than having to treat those dollars as tax increment.
So Mr. Chair.
Ms. Ellis, by keeping them locally, what is it the city would intend to do with them?
Well, the TIF district that was established back in 1980 was a two-block. Our main street is two blocks. We are a small town of 2,500 people in south central Minnesota, located in Faribault County. And so the TIF district initially included our entire two blocks of downtown. And initially back in 1980, when the district was established, we did a major downtown project, widened out what is known as Broadway, some sidewalk improvements. And then the district kind of sat empty for a while. And it wasn't until I came on board back in about 2003 that we started actively using these funds, knowing that the district would be decertifying in a couple of years. So we did a downtown lighting project. We rehabbed a couple of buildings downtown. And what we'd like to be able to do is to be able to keep the funds and use them again in our downtown area. Even though the district itself would not exist anymore, we would like to have these dollars for some rehab and some downtown improvements to keep our main street viable.
So, Ms. Ellis, not for just general operating expenses of the city, would they be used for capital expenditures?
Mr. Chair, at this point, what the council is looking at, we are looking at some improvements to other buildings in the downtown area. We have another building that is basically in need of demolition. We are working with our local realtor to be able to purchase the building and demo that and maybe look at a park space in our downtown area, some green space. And those are the types of projects we would like to be able to use it for.
Ms. Ellis, if the committee were to kind of tighten up some of the uses of that money for Senator Rosen, maybe we could work with you on so that the money just doesn't flow to the city's bottom line and it actually gets reinvested in some public purpose downtown. I think people would probably be more comfortable with it.
Mr. Chair, that'd be absolutely wonderful because, as you know, in these small towns, they need cosmetic help also and rehabilitation. And, Mr. Chair, if I could say that the Faribault County Board has a resolution passed for this, and the Wells School District has a resolution passed. So.
That's helpful. Thank you. Good. You
and did we have your letters.
You did your homework.
That's
true. Senator Pogler.
How much money is involved?
There is really, excuse me.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pogemiller, we're talking, it's a $300 per month lease payment that the law firm is paying. So when we look at, if we subtract out the $300 that they paid while the district still certified, $300 a month, we're looking at $1,500 that they paid through December 31st of 06, which would legitimately be tax increment payments. Outside of that, we'd have another 2.5 years of lease payments at $300 a month. If they choose the option to purchase at the end of the three-year lease, the purchase price would be $29,200. And the idea behind that was between the $10,800 they paid in lease payments and the $29,200, we would recapture the $40,000 that the city invested in purchasing and rehabbing the building.
$40,000, Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if this is good or bad, but it's kind of a mini NRP. Real mini compared to.
Real mini, yeah.
It's true. Central Business District.
Increment.
Yeah. Borough Park.
Right. Yeah.
That's the Minneapolis Neighborhood Revitalization Program. And again, I don't know if that's good or bad. I don't mean to hurt your bill. I just
see. Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious, how many square feet does a law firm get for $300 a month? Seems like a pretty good deal.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I would say we are probably looking at a building that is maybe 1,200 square feet.
Okay.
A smaller building in our downtown area, one level. I would think a good deal as well.
Very important for the city to have a tenant in the building.
Absolutely.
You bet.
Absolutely.
Any other questions, members? Senator Rosen, I think we'll do a little work with council and probably contact you about tightening up some of the use of the money, maybe.
That'd be wonderful.
So if you could be available for that at some point here in the next month or so, the chair lays over Senate File 2601 for possible inclusion in the committee's omnibus bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, no, they did.
Senator Olsen, welcome to the Tax Committee. Have you been here before? Taylor's Falls, you were here with.
You guys have a good good memory, that's for sure. Mr. Chair, it's a pleasure for me to be before you today on Senate File 2480, and this is in regards to the Forest Lake, or the Comfort Lake Forest Lake Watershed District. And what they're asking to do is go from Minnesota Chapter 103D to a 103B. And what that means, I'm going to have Randy Anhorn explain, and he's the administrator. And we also have Jackie Anderson, who is the chair of the Comfort Lake Forest Lake Watershed District. I'll turn it over to them at this time.
Mr. Chair and Senators, my name is Randy Anhorn, and I am the district administrator for the Comfort Lake Forest Lake Watershed District. With me today, as Senator Olsen had mentioned, is our board president, Jackie Anderson, who actually was also involved in the startup of the Comfort Lake Forest Lake Watershed District. And we also have supporting staff from the Minnesota Association of Watershed Districts and the Board of Water and Soil Resources. We're here today to testify on behalf of Senate File 2480, which is special legislation seeking, as Senator Olsen had mentioned, designation of our watershed district as a metro watershed, 103B. Currently, Comfort Lake Forest Lake Watershed District acts under Minnesota State Statute Chapter 103D, as in David. The B and D can get confusing. We are 60% in Washington County and 40% in Chisago County. So we straddle both the seven-county metropolitan area and the outstate area. Because we are not wholly within the seven-county metro area, we are, again, acting under Minnesota State Statute 103D. 103D is the statewide watershed law for watershed districts throughout the state. However, in 1982, the legislature adopted the Metropolitan Watershed District Law, which was put in place to address rapid urbanization of the seven-county metro area, as well as trying to reduce administrative costs to implement projects and to manage the resources in the districts. While 103D, in which we currently act under, does provide provisions to for the district to carry out our needs, 103B provides extra tools to implement projects and manage our resources, of which in Washington or in Comfort Lake Forest Lake Watershed District we have six lakes listed as impaired for excessive nutrients by the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. By gaining 103B, however, it is not the end of what Comfort Lake Forest Lake would have to do. As part of this 103B statute, we're required to revise our watershed management plan, which is basically the playbook that watershed districts use to map out their future to address resource management needs, impairments, set in place programs and policies. As part of B, we have to, again, we are right now acting under 103D. The requirements are somewhat different in what we need to put in our watershed management plan. Under B, it requires more upfront participation and review from our local communities. That'd be counties, local stakeholders, cities, more involvement with technical and citizen advisory committees. We will have numerous public hearings as part of this process, as well as going through a multi-review process where the communities review our plan, state and regional agencies also review our plan. All these things through 103B are put in place so we have ample opportunity for public comment and accountability for our eventual for public to the public taxpayers. On that same note, currently we present our budgets annually to the county boards, and we have hold public hearings on our budgets. I guess at this time I'll pass on to Jackie, our president, and Ms. Anderson can add to that.
I think Randy's pretty much covered the legislative piece. I just wanted to talk about a little historical perspective.
Ms. Peterson, your name for the record.
I'm sorry, Jackie Anderson.
Anderson. Okay.
My address is Forest Lake, but I live in Wyoming Township, and this water issue first came to the forefront for us in that area early 1992. And as I think we all know, the southern portion of Chisago County and northern part of Washington County is a very fast urbanizing area and has been since the early 90s. Chisago County, I've even read, is one of the fastest growing counties in the country. So we have all this urbanization pressure that has come about and caused all kinds of water issues. In the early 90s, we were operating under the agricultural ditch law. And when these issues first surfaced, the joint ditch board had to be reinstituted between Washington and Chisago County. And it soon became clear that that wasn't an adequate method to handle the issues that we were facing. And so in the middle part of the 1990s, we tried to do a joint WMO structure with the Forest Lake WMO, which had been around and was considered one of the forefront and ideal operating WMOs at that time. That structure did not work. And so in the late 90s, the watershed district formation happened, and we were designated as a 103D because the law states that you have to be wholly within the seven-county metro area to be under 103B. Now, we are a unique district in that we have, as Randy mentioned, 60% of our area is in that seven-county structure under 103B, but we operate fully as a metro, if you will, on a day-to-day basis. It's been very difficult for us to operate under that 103D legislation. About a year ago, there was a legislative audit done of watershed districts, and our district did not fare well. We were chided, really, for not getting things accomplished. And in my view, a lot of reason for that is the operational constraints under 103D in the environment that we operate in. I've been on the board now, this is my fourth year, and we've spent the last several years really trying to change that structure and to change that operating environment, and we've run up against brick walls under 103D. So in consultation with our communities, we decided that 103B was a better environment for us, and so we have the support of all of our communities coming forward for that operational change. So that's why we're here.
Members, there's a letter that was handed out from the chair of the Washington County Board that I think is kind of important. If you look at the second paragraph, and Senator Olsen, Senator Vandeveer came to see me about this and brought to my attention that there was some concern on the part of Washington County wanting to have some kind of oversight over what the levy is, because under current law in these watershed districts, there is not any county authority to modify the levy, the way I understand it.
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
Have you had a conversation with Senator Vandeveer about that, if there's a way we can kind of split the baby here still get the work done?
That's a good question. I've talked to a number of the players, Chisago County Commissioner Ben Monska, who represents the district in Chisago County that this would lie in. And Senator Vandeveer and I have had a number of conversations, and I think Dennis Herberg is here from Washington County Commissioner and represents the north end up there. He's here today. I think one of the interesting things about this, there is oversight, you are correct, by the counties, but they don't have a yes or no on it. They can review the plan, but they don't have a vote on whether or not they can stop the plan. But one of the things that these watersheds are appointees of the county board. They serve at a three-year term. So I suspect that, you know, they would. One of the complaints is, as Jackie alluded to, is that they're not doing anything. They do a lot of engineering, but no projects come around. Well, with the ability to do ad valorem tax, they will be able to fund projects that are in the design phase. They'll actually be able to go ahead and do those projects. As far as the compromise, this opens up a whole can of worms because Washington County has, I believe, 6 or 7 watersheds within their district, and none of those actually have, you know, approval by the county board either, and nowhere else in the state. So then do we all of a sudden open up every watershed district in the state for this kind of review? So if there is compromised language at this point, I'm not sure.
Mr. Anhorn.
Mr. Chair and Senators, also on that same note, with our watershed district transecting 2 counties, and we do present our budgets annually and are in contact with the commissioners, do have public hearings for the public involvement and accountability, but the complexity of water, after working years, as Ms. Anderson had mentioned, on setting up, doing a hydraulic study throughout the watershed to figure out exactly in sub-watersheds where water is coming from, where it's going, adding on to that a water quality, a load allocation model that tells us then exactly where the phosphorus or the nutrients are coming from to address our impaired water bodies so we can set up a capital improvement plan to actually remediate these issues. The question or the excuse me, the complexity comes in when we look, for example, at a lake, Bowen Lake, which is listed as impaired by the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency for nutrients, is in northern Washington County. However, we have large phosphorus loads coming from Chisago County to that area. So we have to have planned some projects for Chisago County to immediately address an impairment in Washington County. Water flows out of Bowen Lake through Washington County for a few miles, collecting stormwater runoff, and then heads back northwest through Chisago County and again through impaired water bodies prior to hitting Comfort Lake and discharging out of the district and eventually making its way to the St. Croix River. So water is complex. It does not stop at any political boundary, be it a city or a county. And the difficulty in actually having a potential for an 11th hour veto of a process that has taken years to set up and money, taxpayer money to send up, can be somewhat problematic because, especially having 2 different counties, if they're both playing in that same game, or maybe only one county is interested. I know that you had have a letter in front of you from Commissioner Motzka from Chisago County, who mentions that he is interested in the legislation as it is currently written. He does not want to have approval of budgets. Thank you.
Senator Squay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Olsen and testifiers. You know, I represent a area that has a large, well, at least 3 multi-county watershed districts in it. And I'm here to tell you from personal opinion that if the public and by extension, the county boards aren't happy with the watershed district is doing, the membership on the board does change. I mean, they appoint these members. So if they don't like what's going on, they can affect the change that is needed. It does take a little time because watershed districts are on this 3-year revolving membership. But up in my neck of the woods, we have a saying, you know, whiskey's for drinking and water's for fighting over. And if you can separate the politics, I think the people that drafted this watershed language did a very good job because they've separated the politics directly by having the county board appoint the managers and then letting the managers go and administer the watershed. And the reason you do that is because you want the water managed the best for the resource and the land, and tried to keep some of the politics out of it. But in the end, there is political ramifications. And, you know, what I would ask Senator Olsen in the watershed district is to, you know, I read the first paragraph, and they support the efforts to do this. But then the second paragraph, they want this other requirement. And to be honest, I wouldn't be supportive of this other requirement in their initiative. I think it's a step backwards, and I just think either you do it with the process that we have or you don't do it, but you don't do a modified approach here.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think Senator Scoy might have answered my question, but I just want to be clear. I guess my first question is how are the commissioners named to this particular watershed district? They're appointed by county commissioners from both Chisago and Washington County. Are they separate, or are they kind of appointed jointly? How does that work?
Mr. Chair and Senators, since our makeup is 60% in Washington and 40% in Chisago County, the county commissioners in Chisago County appoint two mm-hmm. board members, board of managers, and Washington County appoints three, and they go through an interview process with the county commissioners, and they do a good job of making sure that their issues.
Mr. Brandon, are they any kind of a staggered term? Or?
Yes. We are on staggered terms. And we have to live within the watershed boundaries, of course.
Senator Dibble.
And I think I heard Senator Olsen say that no other county board has final approval over the levy of a watershed district anywhere in the state.
That's correct.
Mr. Chair and Senator, yeah, that's so correct throughout the entire state.
So this would be very unique if we were to take this step. And then finally, why the original construct in state statute distinguishing watershed districts wholly within the metropolitan area and outside? I mean, was there some wisdom at some time to that? And obviously the metropolitan area is different now than perhaps when that statute was first enacted. And so is that wisdom? I mean, do we have a larger problem that we might need to address in our
Mr.
statutes?
Chair and Senators, I might address that better with Steve Woods, who represents the Board of Water Soil Resources, who oversees watershed districts and took part in.
Mr. Woods, welcome to the Tax Committee. Your name and position for the record, please.
My name is Steve Woods. I'm Assistant Director with the Minnesota Board of Water and Soil Resources. If I understand the question correctly, is how did we get these separate metropolitan authorities for watersheds?
Why is there a 103B and a 103D?
Principal reason for it is when 103B was enacted back in 1982, what the legislature was seeing back then, Senator Jean Merriam was a big force behind this, was that the cost of implementing stormwater projects was too expensive. Too much effort was going into the paperwork before you could put a shovel in the ground. When you were dealing with urban areas with very small and numerous land parcels, the intent was to try and free that administrative overburden up.
So,
Senator Dibble.
So we heap up the administrative overburdens on the 103Ds and ease them up for the 103Bs. Is that
Mr. Okay. Chair?
Senator Olsen.
If I could follow up with Senator Scoy, would you say then that the first half that we should just end this bill after 103B.205 subdivision 13 and just end the language there? Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Olsen, I wasn't looking at the bill. I was looking at the letter from Washington County, and it says in the first paragraph that they support the efforts, which I think it's a good effort on the watershed district's part. And then in the second paragraph, they say that they also support this requirement that you submit your annual budget, and I wouldn't support that. I don't know if is that that in the bill or not.
No, Mr. Chair and Senator Scoy, that is not in the bill. Thank you.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My personal opinion of watershed districts is very poor. We have the county soil and water conservation districts. We have the state DNR for oversight. I think this is not a good idea. I think we're getting involved in a local issue, and we shouldn't have purview over it. And it would be unique if we did this.
Mr. Woods, is there too many duplicative authorities over water? I mean, I think Senator Johnson has a point. I mean, how many layers of authorities do we have And there's some room for some cost savings there someplace if we expanded somebody's authority and removed somebody else's.
It's a very good question, several good questions. There are several layers of government. We've got the various state agencies, which you all know. At the local level, within the metropolitan area, you've got watershed management organizations of either a watershed district or a joint powers arrangement, essentially covering every square inch of the metro. In addition, there are soil and water conservation districts, which we have statewide. There are 91 of those. They have different authorities and different roles. Because of the similarity of their name, people often confuse the similarity of their roles. The watersheds have the ability to levy funds and predominantly undertake a lot of project work. Soil and water conservation districts are kind of a portal or a gateway to accessing USDA Farm Bill dollars and working with small landowners, small parcels and with landowners. They do not have regulatory functions, whereas most of the watersheds have at least some limited regulatory programs that they've been running. So they aren't stepping on each other's toes. They have complementary roles, that is true.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Also, though, when there is an issue, they have a finger-pointing battle, and let that person handle it or let that district handle it. I think there's too much overlap, even though there's a great explanation. There's still an enforcement seems to be a problem. I still think this is a local issue to be solved locally.
Senator Olstein.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, I'm not sure, because this is an existing watershed, that the request being made is to keep the same watershed district, but giving it additional authority for this ad valorem taxing ability. Is your concern that we shouldn't do that, or that is your concern with the overall the watershed districts within the state?
It's the local issue. It's the local issue, Mr. Chairman. I think that the battle is still not finished. There seems to be some dissension.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had kind of two things. Just to respond to Senator Johnson, I think they have come up with a local solution, and they need some changes to the statute to enact that solution. There is some disagreement on one point, and that's whether the Washington County Board would be given final approval over the levy that would be enacted to engage some of these projects that are considered. That's what would be unique if we were to give them that sort of authority, and I think that would probably be unwise. Sometimes we're asked to settle some of those questions, and that's fine. We can play that role. The final comment I'll make is just a larger comment, and that is, if you go up to Chisago County, it's a classic, it's classic demonstration of urbanization moving out beyond where it has been. Classic exurbs, and you go and you see lots and lots of farm fields are subdivided and they become subdivisions, and that is true around the entire metro area. And so I would just ask the state agency perhaps to think about some larger policy solutions so these don't land in our laps every time we see, because water runs where it runs. It doesn't follow political boundaries. It just goes where it goes.
Senator Olstein, watershed districts within Washington County have unlimited levying authority. So the county already has some watershed districts in the county that aren't restricted on levy. Is that correct?
I don't think that's correct. I think there's six or seven watershed districts within the county that don't need to. Their plans, I believe I'm stating this correctly, their plans would go before the county board for review, but the county board does not have a yes or no vote on that.
Okay.
And is that correct?
So that's Mr. Woods, is that the situation in the existing watershed districts as it relates to Washington County? Is the county can't amend the levy?
The watershed districts, your original question was about whether they have if it's unlimited authority to raise revenue, and the answer to that is well, no. Their ability to raise revenue is based upon undertaking projects and programs that they have in their state-approved management plan. Up to doing their plan, yes, they can raise that revenue. And the other, I think there are 6 watershed districts and several other joint powers watersheds in Washington County. The other 6 watershed districts do have both 103B and 103D authorities.
So I don't quite understand why Washington County thinks they're exposing themselves to somehow some additional tax liability by putting the Chisago portion in. Senator Olsen, what's the position of the Chisago County Board? Because they are picking up some additional liability that they currently aren't exposed to. What's their position on this?
The Chisago County Board has written a letter in support of the new authority to the 103B. We do have Dennis Herberg. I guess he's not probably a friendly witness, but he's here to speak on his side of the Washington County issue. Or he's here. I believe his intention is to speak.
Senator Sequoyah.
Well, Mr. Chair, you kind of went to where I was going to go. I mean, currently Washington County doesn't have the authority to do this. The watershed district, if they were wholly within Washington County, could levy this authority. Now, Chisago doesn't. But from what I understood from the witness from the watershed district, part of what's going on is because they're a multi-county watershed district with differing levy authorities is causing them administrative problems. If they were all one or all the other, it wouldn't be as big a problem. And because they're located where they are in this fast-growing area, it makes more sense to go towards the metropolitan model as opposed to the rural model. So that would be what my thoughts were.
If I could just add a couple of things. I want to just echo what the senator just said. That's exactly on point. And I want to just point out that because all of the district managers have to live within the hydrologic boundaries of the watershed, when we vote on projects, any levy, we're voting to levy ourselves. And so we have a direct interest in of course, in our pocketbooks and in what goes on. I'm not sure that that's the case if it would go to a county. We might have at least one county member that lives within the hydrologic boundaries, but certainly not all of them. So there's a much more direct interest with the watershed managers. And then I wanted to just also comment on Senator Dibble's comment that I do think that the metropolitan area, as it's defined in the law right now, might have been true in the early 1980s, but certainly doesn't mirror what's happened in the last 15 to 20 years. And so that is obviously causing some of the stress.
Anything else from committee members? Senator Olsen, anything further? Otherwise, we're going to have some other testimony on it. I'm assuming there's somebody else here who wants to comment on it.
Yep. No, that's all we have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Who else would like to testify on Senator Olsen's bill, Senate File 2480?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Dennis Hagberg from Washington County. I'm currently the Washington County Board Chair. And I'd like to thank you for your time to consideration. I don't think I realized as a child when I was in Delft, Minnesota, down by Wyndham, and the arguments about grain tile that it would carry forward into my life into the 60s. But I was elected county commissioner in 1989, and I think the first phone call I got shortly thereafter was a gentleman called me and complained about the culvert under one of the county roads was too large. And I don't think a half hour later I got a call from the neighbor on the other side complaining that it was too small. So now I've got myself into I consider ditch law and some other issues. I was one of the county board members that started the organization, the WMO, or Watershed District in Washington and Chisago County. At that time, we had a considerable battle over flooding in Forest Lake, and we had also some issues on our development that was going rapidly. And one of the problems was we, under D, we had only the authority to assessment. So we thought that if we started I look back and D was our only option, and then we had to go through an assessment process of determining improvements and how much each person would pay. That became very cumbersome. They are now currently limited to, I think, $250,000 of dollars to for administration and other things that they can do. So we very much support B, because they can do some things that are very much necessary. But on the other hand, we have seven watershed districts in our, and we've had a number of studies that we've gone through over the years to deal with watershed districts and trying to merge them. In fact, when we tried to merge some of the WMOs to consolidate, we were sued by the WMOs saying, no, you can't force us to merge. So we had to, very much over years, we interviewed our applicants, and we got a couple mergers take place, because we used to have 12. In this particular case, we're looking for authority to approve, because it's the only one in the state that's going outside the metro area. If it looked at the map that I had handed out, it's the only one that extends into a rural county. And some of our watershed districts we've had battles with. In one in particular, we didn't really complain. We indicated we didn't like it. They raised their levy 29%. And that was what we considered excessive. Well, we've had those same arguments with our HRA, and we have had a bill, and now we have the authority over the HRA to limit their budget. They get approval of yes or no. And they're appointed same as the watershed district. But now they know that if they come to us at the last minute with an extreme budget increase, we're going to say no. And that has changed the attitude so that they cooperate with us and come with their budgets and tell us what their projects are, and we then have gotten along. I'll put it that way over the years. So we sort of feel that this would be a pilot to see how this works out. Because when we had the ditch authorities, we had the two counties, and we had arguments and discussions. But in those days, it was more the assessment process and how you've raised the tax levels necessary to do projects. In this case, I think it's more as we want to do the responsible thing, and we want the authority to do, to look at oversight, to make sure that they do projects that, instead of just spending their money on administration, because that's one of our problems with when we did the study. You have 6-7 watersheds. Each one have an administrator. Each one has an attorney. Each one has an engineer. And boy, again, they spend money. And Rice Creek, I think, is their budget for their engineering is close to $2 million. So we think that we need to look at it. But well, we don't know exactly what form that we should do it. We didn't want to ask for all the watershed districts in Washington County unless we go through a process, have public hearings, and discuss it. But we know that we would like something done differently than we're doing now. So that's why we're looking at this particular one and would support Vandeveer's amendment. And that's why we came to our position when the race Comfort Lake originally came to us and we discussed it. And that's how we sent the letter saying we would approve or support it, but we would like to have some levy authority or have approval of their work plans.
Thank you, Mr. Hagberg. Anything from the committee? Mr. Hagberg, did you say the current levy in this watershed district is $250,000?
I'd have to refer to the expert.
Mr. Anhorn?
There's a levy.
Mr. Chair and Senators, actually in 2008, our levy is for $307,000.
$307,500 for our particular total market value for our watershed is $1.8 billion. So in 2008, for a house, a $250,000 home, our annual tax levy would result in $36.
For Mr. Anhorn, that doesn't matter to me.
Okay, I apologize.
I do... I mean, Mr. Hegberg raises an issue. I mean, the use of consultants and attorneys and the duplication that sometimes happen, I mean they're we're not doing as good a job, I think, in delivering some services that we probably could. And, I mean, I have lots of good friends that are consultants, and, I mean, they find ways to make money. And that's their job. And I guess I don't want to reinvent the wheel here. Senator Olsen, I think it would be helpful if you and Senator Vandiver could sit down and see if we can figure something out. And maybe we can't. And maybe we just can't get this done. I don't want to reinvent the wheel for the entire state and have county boards having some new authority over watershed districts that, you know, impede their ability to get projects done.
Mr. Chair?
But I don't quite understand Washington County's concern. I could understand Chisago County maybe having some concern that they're opening themselves up to some new liability, but Senator Olsen?
Can I ask a chair of council or a question of council?
Sure.
I got some language from the Chisago County Zoning Administrator that said basically that county boards in Chisago County and Washington County would be able to approve and concur or review and concur the plans. Now, with the word concur, does that mean that they would, if they didn't agree to it, that they would be able to block it or... I thought that was pretty compromising language, or, you know, that might be some language that might work. But I guess the word concur, I would need more of a definition on what that really meant.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olsen, I can't think that I've seen that model of language used before in this kind of situation, and I think it might be pretty ambiguous as to whether you really intend for the county board to have approval or just review. Concur, I guess, if the council or the county board would have the power just to review and concur, it almost sounds like the intention is to say that they can take a look at it and they can agree with it, but it doesn't sound like it gives them the option to disapprove it or to disallow its going forward.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate that interpretation. That probably is pretty correct.
I think approve or disapprove might be the better terminology. Senator Scoia.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, I'm sorry I didn't write your name down, and my memory is worse than Senator Dibble's. I can't remember if I don't write it down. But Commissioner, you did mention that you are careful in your interviewing process, and you know, you've made some progress toward bringing this together, and I understand that sometimes that progress can be frustratingly slow, but you are making progress toward accomplishing what the county board is heading toward, and I mean, I applaud what you're trying to do because it seems like that is a good direction. But if you're making progress, albeit slow, without us having to open up a problem for the whole state, you know, is there any, you know, can you continue to work down that road? And because, you know, I've served on county board, and I'm pretty experienced with watershed district boards, and I know that when the public is unhappy, they go to their county boards, and watershed district managers change. They just do. And I think you're doing what you need to do. And I know it's slow, but is there, you know, no thought that working with the Chisago County Board and your members, you can appoint directors that are going to do what you think that the people, you know, desire? Because I think I personally think it's a good process in that it gives you that distance, so the person with the complaint on the culvert is not calling you directly anymore. He's now calling them, and that's a good thing. But Can you? What do you think of that? Is there any way you can keep going
well,
down the current
a,
road?
Yeah,
Mr. Hagberg.
Senator Cole. Yeah, I would, given a lot of that consideration, I don't want to have this bill not go through and not have them have their beat. But I would like, in the best of the worlds, to have the other. Our difficulty is that in Rice Creek Association, we only have one appointee out of five. And it then takes a number of years in cooperation with Anoka County. And I've been criticized for my appointee in Rice Creek because he owned land. And one of the problems with the appointee process, they have to be approved first by the city. They have to be recommended to us by the city to be appointed. And it's not a thankful job. It's one of really a thankless job, and it's not paid well. So when we don't get a lot of good volunteers to come forward and say, yes, I want to take on this challenge and be yelled at by my neighbors on both sides. And if that becomes an issue.
Mr. Chair.
Senator, go ahead.
Commissioner, and maybe to somebody who knows beyond this, but I'm not familiar with the process of in the city where the city would start the referral process and then go to the county board. Is that a limiting component of the finding directors, or you know, maybe we ought to take.
Well,
and I don't know if it's state or local or where that condition comes from.
Well, what we've done is asked the city. Sorry, we've asked the cities to reconsider and look harder for another member to come forward. And then we've had a vacancy. I think in LaRue's case, we had him serve for a longer period of time until we could get somebody to come forward that would be more interested in serving and be more in the interview process, thinking in the lines that we were thinking. And we, all five county board members, interview those individuals now, because we started the process because we had a number of areas that had flooding issues in Browns Creek, Rice Creek, Forest Lake, Whiskey Lake, which is Sunnybrook Lake. And so we've had a number of issues when the water was higher, but how do you deal with it? And, of course, when somebody's septic systems are underwater, they don't want to wait 6 years to deal with it.
Mr. Hagberg, Washington County would have three of these managers and Chisago two.
Yep.
I mean, do you have other watershed districts that your county is participate in where Washington County controls the number?
Yeah, we control. We control, and some of them we control the whole thing. Like in Scandia, we control all the board members. That's a Marine. That's the one that just merged. The name escaped me. And then we have Browns Creek, but we control the whole thing. So we control all the board members. I do look at this watershed when we had started it, we were looking at much larger watershed, and Chisago County does not have any watershed districts in there, and that was some discussion because they didn't want to know if they wanted to get into that business because they didn't have any formally organized, and so someday that we look at this one, it will enlarge because it flows over to the St. Croix River, comes from Anoka County. It's not a small watershed district, and it become more complicated as we develop and grow in this area.
Mr. Anhorn, is that true? This district's going to get bigger?
At this particular time, Mr. Chair and Senators, there's no plans for us incorporating any more
Mr. Chair.
Drainage area into our watershed district.
Senator Squay.
Mr. Chair, to that point, I think perhaps we could make this change only for the size that it currently is. And if they're going to expand and become that, you know, maybe they have to come back.
Commissioner, if we created a pilot project that defined the boundary, that it couldn't be expanded without future legislative action, would that temper the county's position?
It would be, I think it would be acceptable, we would still would still like to see how it would work if we had to approve their budget. Because we know that impaired waters is becoming, under definition, some of that's impaired naturally and some of it's impaired because of development. And impaired waters is kind of going to become a much larger budget issue for the watershed districts as well as ourselves as we look at these projects that have to be done to try to keep the system clean.
I would think Washington County would be very concerned with what's going on in Chisago. Senator Olsen?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm hearing you very clearly that I should be talking to Senator Vandeveer, and I've talked with him a number of times. One of the concerns that I think the Bowser folks and some of the other watersheds do have is that, and as I mentioned earlier, if this is opened up, that then all of a sudden now there is county board review of the budget, but not just review, but approval up or down of those budgets, that then this will probably be the slippery slope and it will become statewide. And Senator Skoy, I think, has addressed very eloquently the arm's length distance there between the county boards and the water management districts and the watershed districts. So in answer to your question earlier about working with Senator Vandeveer, we have talked, and it seems like it is kind of an impasse. I don't know if that's something we can work around, that language about county board approval. There is a procedure that these plans also do go to the state. The Bowser Board, I believe, is the review of their plans, too. So there is quite a bit of process that goes through before they do implement a project that would actually raise taxes. So,
Sanderson?
Yes, I'd like to follow up on a point that was made earlier, and I think it's a very important one. There's more to 103B than the tax issue, and that's consistency. And the point was raised several times by people here. Under 103B, our communities have to adopt our standards. All communities have to treat water the same way. Under 103D, it's an option. And one of the issues, I was on the Wyoming Town Board in the 90s, and one of the issues that comes up when I talk to the city council and town board members is if they do what they're supposed to be doing but the other community doesn't, that's not a fair situation. And that's why we have such widespread support for 103B within our watershed district. Every single one of our communities supports this.
Commissioner, if we define the boundary of that's in existence on March 1st of 2008,
okay, I was thinking of if we define the boundaries as it currently is, as a pilot, so that if it was expanded, it would have to come back and maybe remove the county's approvals, and or if one of the counties approved and the other county didn't approve, it would still go through, but then that wouldn't place Chisago County at a disadvantage because we have three appointees and they only have two.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. there is a mechanism to seek approval and then deal with a difference of opinion through a mandated negotiation. It's kind of modeled on the municipal consent. I hate to raise that subject here, but municipal consent has a lot of mythology around it. It actually works pretty well. We use that to reconcile the Met Council's interest in making sure that any transit projects that go forward in the metropolitan area conform to. And Met Council is a not elected body that has levy authority, so that there's some consultation and some ability to reconcile differences. And I'm happy to share that with. It's fairly simple, fairly straightforward, and fairly short order if it needs to be used. And can share that with Senator Olsen. But I go back to my earlier statement. This is going to come up a lot more as the urban boundaries move outward. We're going to see a lot more of this hybrid watershed district, these hybrid watershed district issues, as more and more parcels get subdivided and we see urban development where there wasn't before. So that's, again, a plea to the state agency to help us come up with a larger policy solution so we don't have these conversations of 20 more times in the next couple of years.
I understand Washington County's situation. They currently control the board, but as it expands out, the watershed expands out, they're going to pay they have most of the tax capacity.
Yeah, 80%.
80% of the tax capacity. They're going to pay the biggest burden of the cost. So as they don't control the appointees anymore, and they're still being asked to pay the majority of the cost, I mean, I understand the residents of Washington County having some concern over that. Senator Sway?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I too, think that some kind of recognition of boundary changes would have us come back and look at this levy authority. But, this is going to very likely just get laid over for possible inclusion. There was some mention of an amendment. I don't have an amendment. I don't think there is anything here. So why don't we let Senator Olson and Senator Vandeveer and interested parties see what kind of amendments we see to this when we voting on it for possible inclusion and see where it goes.
Senator Squire, I think that's a good point. Senator Olson, why don't you try to work with Senator Vandeveer and see if we, if we gave the authority that the bill grants to the existing district. I mean, you'd get what you wanted, but that would, I think, put us in a situation where if they wanted to expand the watershed district, where Washington County ultimately picks up most of the cost, that we'd have to come back and revisit that, and they'd have an opportunity to come back and take another shot at it.
Mr. Chair, if you would move the bill forward with that language in there, I think that would be very acceptable.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'll move this to get laid over for possible inclusion in the tax omnibus bill, Senate File 2480.
Senator Scoy moves Senate File 2480 be laid over for possible inclusion in the committee's omnibus bill. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. Senator Olson, try work with Washington County a little bit and with Senator Vandeveer, and maybe it would seem I'd like to give you what you're asking for in the bill and still give Washington County some kind of protection in the event the district expands significantly and they don't totally lose control. I think that's a reasonable pilot to go down for today anyway.
Mr. Chair, members, I appreciate the time and consideration on this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Woman on the end here.
Senator Tomasoni, Senate File 2689. Welcome back to the Tax Committee.
Thank you. Well, it's nice to be back.
Do you have an amendment?
Oh, not yet. But the bill's already been amended, so that might be okay. Mr. Chairman and committee members, Senate File 2689 is the authorization for white community to form a hospital district, and essentially what it does is it allows for the establishment of a hospital district in St. Louis County by resolution of the governing boards of any two or more of the cities that are named in the bill. And the cities are Aurora, Biwabik, White Lakes, Townsend, Biwabik, White, and Colvin. And then once established, any city, town, or unorganized area in St. Louis County may join the district. It's pretty much boilerplate hospital district language. It has a couple of exceptions. One is the contiguity requirement, and that's just because of the makeup of the area. And the other one is that it has a maximum levy, which is different than some other hospital districts. The issue here, members, is that in the area of Aurora, White Lakes, and White Community, or White Township, the hospital is adjoined to a nursing home, and the cash flow of the hospital is such that it's endangering the continued operation of the hospital. As you all know, the area suffered greatly from the closure of LTV Steel and losing 1,400 jobs, and there's about another 144 jobs here, not to mention a real valuable service that is provided to the area of Aurora, White Lakes, and White Township. And so this is an attempt to make sure that people have the ability to keep their hospital and keep their nursing home, as well as these 140-some jobs. And with that, what I'll do is I'll turn this over to my witnesses and let them explain it to you a little bit better, because they're the hands-on people. So who wants to go first?
I'll go. Good morning, Senator Bach and members of the Tax Committee. My name is Jim Carroll, and I am the CEO of White Community Hospital. I have been for the past 16 months. I was called out of retirement. I don't know if this is a temporary position or interim. But I'm up there trying to help the organization get established and get back on their feet again. On behalf of our entire board, I want to thank Senator Tomasoni for introducing this legislation, and hopefully that will get things moving in the right direction. The White Community Hospital and Nursing Home is located in the city of Aurora, which provides services to the surrounding area on the east end of the Iron Range. The cities, basically, he'd already mentioned, were White Lakes, Aurora, Bowabic, and several smaller town of White, and several smaller taxing districts. We're approximately 60 miles north of Duluth, and the area has, as Senator Tomasoni also mentioned, experienced quite a few difficulties since the closure of LTV and the loss of about 1,400 jobs. Within the White Community Complex, which is a critical access hospital, I know some of you people are familiar with smaller hospitals in that definition. we have the normal services of a small hospital. We have an emergency room with a helipad, which is used quite often. We have surgery, lab x-ray, physical therapy, occupational therapy, and therapies itself are also utilized by school districts, several of them up in that area, and other nursing homes that we provide outreach services to. The hospital also has a small clinic where we house a family practice physician in addition to our own clinic in town. We have an optometrist and an optical shop, which is the only one on that end of the Iron Range. There's none in White Lakes at all. And also there's an ophthalmologist come over from Virginia, and we also have, we just acquired the services of a podiatrist who's starting to do a number of surgeries at our facility. This healthcare facility is a great asset to the citizens of the area and is the largest employer, which was also mentioned, about 140 personnel. Due to the loss of jobs throughout the area over the past years and other economic downturns, the hospital is enduring great financial challenges. These challenges have prohibited our facility from moving forward with needed capital improvement replacements as well as major repairs. It is our hope that brighter days are ahead with the projects such as PolyMet and Mesabi Nugget, which would create somewhere in the area of 400 to 500 jobs. It is important that our area continue to offer excellent medical facilities and a nursing home to the citizens of this area and any new citizens that may be moving into the area as a result of the increased uptick in mining. Recently, area residents made a commitment by passing a school addition referendum, sending a signal that we do believe in our future up there. We feel that it is the best interest of the East Range that the hospital continue to provide services for that area. We feel it is in the public interest that a district hospital be established within our current service area. And recently there's been two entities that have already passed resolutions supporting this legislation, and they are the City of Aurora and the Town of White. And we have here today Mary Hess, who's the mayor of Aurora, and she'd like to speak on behalf of the citizens of Aurora. We believe we'll be available for questions and answers at the end of her testimony. Thank you for allowing us the time to be here today. Thank you.
Mr. Carroll, thank you. Madam Mayor, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Chairperson Senator Bach and members of the committee, I too would like to thank you today for allowing us to personally present our situation. I am Mary Hassan. I am the mayor of Aurora, and I'm speaking on behalf of all of our citizens. And I think Mr. Carroll has basically covered most of the hospital details. I just have to say that, you know, the hospital and the nursing home out there is a great asset to our community, and we need the medical facility there. So we're trying in every way, which way we can, to do whatever we can. And like you said, we have met some real challenges in the last few years with the loss of jobs there, and done some unique things in the city. And our citizens of Aurora and the community are tough people, and they just, like I said, they just took on an extra tax burden recently when we added on to our school, or we're in the process of adding on to the school. And we're hoping that we can get more entities involved in this. And I've done some personal presentations on it so that they understand, you know, a little bit about what's going on. And I don't believe White Lakes or Boabic has had their meetings yet. So, but anyway, I want to thank you for letting us come here today.
Mr. Carroll, the hospital district may levy taxes as provided in this section to make grants to the White Community Hospital. I understand that. But then it says, and any affiliated health care facility. What does that mean?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm assuming it means the nursing
home
attached to the hospital. So it's actually part of the building.
And who owns the nursing home?
The hospital owns it.
Who runs it?
Mission Healthcare is just, we entered into an agreement, it was October 1st, so a six-month management agreement. We are in discussions with them to lease it long-term, and that would include them also, you know, for equipment in that area. Then there's also major renovations that we as a owner would still have to be liable for, you know, like roofs and major infrastructure.
Mr. Thomas, I'm just wondering if we got that language quite right. If the nursing, if some nonprofit nursing home administrator from
you're worried about it going to Mission, Texas, huh?
The Texas, yeah. That the money actually stay in the community.
Yeah, we could tighten that up, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Because the intent here is to do it for the hospital and the nursing home in White community. And if that does feel like it's a little bit loose, which it looks like it might be,
I'll talk with council about that a little bit and see if we maybe need to tighten that up a little bit. I'd hate to see us put ourselves in a position where some nursing home administrator from Texas can somehow unfairly leverage the board just because they can. Senator Sklay.
Mr. Chair, have in these hospital districts that we have, do any of them have nursing homes that they're levying for? I mean, is this kind of a new step that we're taking?
In the city of Cook where I live, there is an attached nursing home, but they're both publicly owned and they're both publicly run.
But there's also
they're not contracted out to some private nursing home manager.
Okay.
So it's a little different, I think, when you have some private administration of part of the facility, I think. Senator Larson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think an extension of your question is, if you go to the next line, it says, or provider for any purpose authorized by the hospital district. I guess I'd like to know a little bit more about how tight in statute that that is. And what possibilities there are as it relates to provider for any purpose at some, you know, time in the future. But I think that is also worth looking at.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Pogler.
We have a couple of examples of this already around the state, so I think it could be kind of boilerplate how this is written, couldn't it?
We'll find out. I know we've got a couple of hospital districts that are similar, but I think they're being publicly run. And I think the issue here is the nursing home has been now carved off and is being run by some nonprofit from Texas. So I'd hate to put the hospital board in a situation where this nonprofit nursing home administrator from Texas can somehow determine what the levy is.
Okay.
But where they're publicly owned, we do have those situations and are publicly run and administered.
You could add our provider located within the area of the district.
So I think, Senator Thomas, we'll work a little bit on trying to make sure that the provider, the hospital or other healthcare provider, be maybe in the district or something so that we don't allow too much authority to get outside the state. And the other thing I think we need to do a little work on is in subdivision 4, line 2.5, it says that an unorganized area, they submit a petition with 51% of the residents out of the unorganized area to the hospital board and the auditor that they're automatically in the district. But then in the subdivision 5, unorganized areas, the board members appointed by the county board. So I think in subdivision 4, we probably need to add something subject to approval of the county board. And I think the county, I don't think the county board is going to have a problem with that. I just think the county board needs to know when unorganized areas are entering some taxing district, because ultimately they have to appoint somebody to serve on it, on the board. So I think, Senator Thomas, we'll work with council there to make sure that the county board is involved in including those unorganized areas in the district, and I think they should be allowed to participate, absolutely, but the county board needs to be in the loop. And I can't imagine if the majority of the residents in the unorganized area wanted to be in, the county board would say no. So we'll work on that a little bit too.
I think what you're saying though is that you notify the county board that they've decided to do it, so that they know that they have to appoint somebody.
I think they have to know because they need to appoint somebody.
Right.
So I will work with council to see what, because I'm sure we have some language similar to this for, there are several special laws for hospital districts like this. So we'll take a look at what we do in the other ones where unorganized townships get in, and so that the county knows they have to appoint somebody.
Yep.
So. But, Mr. Carroll, I understand the problem. We've got a problem in small hospitals. When Senator Scoy's got them in his district, I'm sure, all over the state. And as reluctant as we are to increase the property tax burden, these are valuable pieces of public infrastructure in small rural towns. And we just don't have a lot of options. Costs are going up, and population in most rural areas is going down. And so it's a small cost to the general fund members. If you look at the note on it, about $9,000 in potential property tax refund by the increased property taxes potentially. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is this a municipally run hospital, or is it a private?
Senator Tomasoni.
Who owns it?
Go ahead. Mr. Carroll, who owns the hospital?
Private nonprofit, Senator.
And the benefit that you're trying to achieve today cannot be absorbed by the private entity?
No. Ever since the closure of LTV mining, the numbers, financial condition of the hospital has deteriorated considerably in the last 5 years, 6 years.
So, Mr. Chair, what this actually is a subsidy, for lack of a better term, keep the hospital
district. Right. It's for capital improvement, infrastructure, major renovations that has just been put on hold since probably about 2000.
And Mr. Chair, if there was an improvement in the local economy, or if it was the economy was diversified in some way where it wouldn't be so reliant on one major corporation in the region, would we necessarily need this type of action?
I think what we're looking at is infrastructure needs that are going to go on for quite a number of years up there.
Mr. Chairman, I might point out, Senator Limmer, that once the hospital district is formed, there's also the ability to do reverse referendums and get out of the hospital district if people are unhappy with how it's being operated. So And I think that's pretty much boilerplate language with most hospital districts. Well, also.
Senator Lemire, I think what's important here is we're not giving the nonprofit any authority to levy. We're
right.
creating a special taxing district that then can make grants to the nonprofit to help them do some things they're trying to do for the community.
Is there a spokesman from the corporation here? Are they in agreement to this?
Well, here's the CEO.
Well, Mr. Carroll is the CEO of the...
I think you're talking about that private board or the, mm-hmm. the board that would control the levy and the expenditures of the grants. No, there's... Well, you
I would.
Be on there. Yeah.
Senator
Madam Mayor, you're going to make one appointee.
I'm going to make one appointee depending on how many... entities are involved in this. If there's three entities, there will be one appointee from each entity. If there's two entities, I believe we're going to, the language reads that we'll have two from each entity. And it'll be from our council and from the town boards. And they will, actually, their job will be to provide accountability for this fund and to oversee where it goes, what it's being spent on.
Is there, Mr. Chair, is there any concern of the corporation that actually runs the hospital? Is there any concern that they may not even want to be there anymore? Or do they want to be there as long as this is resolved?
Yeah. They want to be there.
All right. That's all I need to know.
Yeah, I'm trying to look at the general powers and see if...
Mr. Thomasoni, any further?
Nope.
Senator Thomas, so I think we have a little work to do, but I think in principle we certainly want to help the White Community Hospital, and we'll just see if we can tighten it up a little bit, because I think we'll find other rural hospitals that are nonprofits looking for something similar, so we should probably try and get this right. So, Chair lays over Senate File 2689 for possible inclusion in the committee's omnibus bill.
Thank you very
Thank you.
Much.
Thank
you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Anything else, members? Tomorrow, the budget forecast is coming out, and finance is going to be using this room tomorrow morning for that purpose. So we will meet on Friday to have finance and the state economist in to talk about the budget forecast. And I think all of us want to see that so that we get a little better participation than we've been having at 8:30, Senator Limmer. How about if we do it at 9 o'clock?
Mr. Chair, that'd be great. I've got a 10-year-old that has to get out the door at 8:15, so I have a very difficult
Will nine work better?
Nine would be excellent.
Senator Johnson, nine work better? Committee's adjourned until 9 a.m. on Friday.